Welcome to the International Double Reed Society podcast. These podcasts feature interviews, sound clips, and other items of interest for members of the IDRS. This is your host, Terry Yule, and I'm pleased to have you come join us. Now, let's enjoy the musicians, the music, and the wonderful art of double reeds. Well, I'm here with one of our outstanding colleagues of the International Double Reed Society. This is an honorary member of the society, Gerald Corey. And just to start off the interview, I'm going to ask him, how did you get your position and what led to the position in Ottawa?
Well, by good fortune, a friend of mine in the Vancouver Symphony, when I had played two seasons as principal bassoon there, Bob Creech, had invited me to Stratford, Ontario, where they have a Shakespeare festival, naturally, but we also had an opera festival under Mario Bernardi. And it happened that Mario Bernardi was selected to be the new conductor of the brand new National Arts Center Orchestra in Ottawa. And I was in the Baltimore Symphony at that time as principal bassoon, and I knew that I had enjoyed working under Mario Bernardi at Stratford. So I initially went up in 1969 when the Art Center opened, and I saw Mario, and I said, I'd love to play in the orchestra. He said, I know you're playing, I'd love to have you play. But then it had been announced that Sergio Comisiona was coming to Baltimore for the first time to take over the orchestra, and I wanted to ideally keep the same woodwind section we'd had for several years so that he wouldn't have to have new people. So I decided to stay in Baltimore, and another player played in the National Arts Center Orchestra for the first three seasons. But they had a lot of trouble with this player because he played to a high pitch, and he tried to get the orchestra to play 4-4-6, and they wouldn't. And even when he got them to play 4-4-2, he was higher than them. So eventually, he was let go, and I got a chance to audition while on a tour of the Baltimore Symphony for the National Arts Center Orchestra, and I got the position. And I've held it for 31 seasons and loved every season. Yeah, it's the best orchestra I ever played in, where everyone played like chamber music all the time. A 46-member orchestra where the cellos and basses always play in tune, and that's amazingly helpful.
Well, you're quite renowned for all of your work on bassoon reeds, and particularly, I guess, working with Lou Skinner, with your different techniques. I know even pre-gouging and working on the interior of the reed. Perhaps you can describe for us a little bit of the work you've done, what led to it, and various parts of the study you've engaged in.
Certainly, that would be a pleasure. When I was in the National Symphony, my first big orchestra to have a position in the bassoon section, as second bassoon, I would often talk with Ken Pasmanik, the principal bassoon, and he would show me a box of reeds made by Lou Skinner. And he would say about them, just opening the box, don't these reeds look exactly as if they grew that way? And I would have to agree with him, and he sounded wonderful on them. So pretty soon I wrote a letter to Mr. Skinner and asked if I could study reed making with him. And over 7 years of study, I picked up just about everything that he wanted me to know about how to do the theory of cane vibration. Mm-hmm. And that was a big step for me in my career. All of my reeds suddenly worked much better, and I could make much better music with them. Mm-hmm. As far as the scraping techniques of Skinner, we now have the book, The Theory and Practice of Lou Skinner's Reed Making by James Mackay and his friends. And that book details the exact work that I learned from Lou Skinner. I'm working on a DVD presentation, which I'm calling My Encyclopedia of the Bassoon Reed, and I hope to have it completed by the end of this year. And it will include all of the models that are in the Mackay book, with me actually scraping them with a zoom so that people can see up close how the scraping is done and how I perform on the reeds and the different characteristics of playing that we can get. Lou Skinner always said, if you can have, like an artist, a variety of types of reed in your reed box, you'll be able to be like the artist's palette and color the music you're playing exactly as you want. And I found that to be true.
Wow.
Excellent. That sounds like an exciting project, and we look forward to seeing that. Who were some of the most influential people in your life, particularly as a bassoonist?
I could probably start at the beginning. Paul Wagner was my high school band director in Plymouth, Michigan. And in my junior year of high school, he brought an instrument to show me, a brand new Kahn bassoon. He said, "I'd like you to consider playing bassoon, and if I take you to a professional bassoonist and he gives you a lesson and your first bassoon read, would you be willing to practice it over the summer so you could play it in the school band next year?" And I followed that course, and I've been enjoying it ever since. Mm.
I know you've been involved teaching a lot of students in your career. Is there something in your teaching method that in particular you emphasize with your students?
Yes, I would say so. I like to look for musicianship training always. One of my best students thanked me for showing him a method book from one of the older French authors that was absolutely the best for developing the long line of musical phrasing, Marius Piard. The second book of his 90 Studies for Bassoon is Etudes Based on Melodies in Every Single Key. The front of the book is C major, the back of the book is F major, and in the middle are all the sharps and all the flats in those keys. And I think it's the most wonderful training book for my students to learn musicianship while they're learning the bassoon.
What is a piece that you can recommend for bassoonists that you think is important for their repertoire?
In addition to studying the Mozart Sonata for bassoon and piano and the Hindemith Sonata as stepping stones towards musicianship and the Bach solo cello suites, I would like to highly recommend Camille Saint-Saëns' Sonate for Basson et Pianoforte, because this piece is a singing piece and has many challenges for the bassoon player to really, really get a step up in his or her career.
Is there a humorous moment you can share from your career that you've had?
Probably I could share two famous ones that I had, both of them with the Baltimore Symphony. One time I went out for an intermission of a rehearsal, and when I came back, the trombonist had changed the water in my reed glass to vodka. And when I put the reed in there, and when I put it in my mouth to play, my surprised expression had the trombones on the floor. They really loved it. But I happened to love vodka, so I didn't mind, and I was able to play the rest of the rehearsal. But another time, we were playing a school concert at an out-of-town location, and I had both my French system bassoon, Buffet Crampon, and my Heckel bassoon at the concert. During the intermission, of course, I got gabbing with some of my friends in the orchestra, and I forgot that I'd left my German bassoon, my Heckel, standing in a corner off the stage. I went back on the stage, and we were doing a Brahms symphony movement, and I had to play it on my buffet crampon. That was certainly amusing for everybody, but it worked fine.
Many people listening to this podcast probably are not aware of the pivotal role you played in the start of the journals for the International Double Reed Society. Can you talk a little bit about what led you to putting together that first journal of the society, which is called To the World's Bassoonists?
I'd be delighted to. Back in 1969, I had the good fortune to meet William Waterhouse of England for the first time, a very fine bassoonist, and he had just had a big upset because his reed maker, from whom he played all of his reeds, had just died after a hiking accident in the Swiss Alps. And he came to me on Saul Schoenbach's advice to learn if I could take him to Lou Skinner to see if Skinner could copy the Ludwig reed. And I took him there, and we had a wonderful day. And then he said, "You know, Gerald, you're talking so much about your interest in bassoonists' problems around the world. Could you start some kind of a journal for bassoonists?" And so I took his address book and copied the list of people that he knew in the world, which was very, very large number. And then I asked Saul Schoenbach for his address of all the bassoonists in the world that he knew. And then I began my newsletter To the World's Bassoonists. Pretty soon after that, Hugh Cooper of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Alan Fox asked me to go to the 1969 MENC conference in Chicago, Illinois, and make an announcement that we wanted to start an American bassoon club, an oboe club. And we had no idea of the name, the International Double Reed Society, at that time. But it was soon after that. And I also wanted to mention that in the first 5 years of the society, I was the editor for bassoon publications in the society, and I came up with the name The Double Reed because it's a double entendre for talking about double reed instruments, and it's a double reed reading about bassoon and reading about oboe in the same book. And that was a great pleasure for me.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk on a podcast for the first time with you, Terry. Thank you.
This is the exciting part of the podcast where you, the listener, can participate in the program. In each podcast, a brief portion of a work for oboe or bassoon will be played. If you know the piece, email me the title, movement, and composer at idrspodcast@comcast.net. That's all lowercase idrspodcast@comcast.net. Please include your name, your city of residence, and your birth date in the email message. The youngest person giving the correct answer will win the Unfabulous Sonic Prize in the next program. Entries need to be received by the 21st of each month to be eligible. I'm pleased to announce that we have our very first winner competing for the Unfabulous Sonic Prize in the IDRS podcast. And this means two things. First, it means I have a listener. Yay! Somebody's actually listening to this. And number two, even more importantly, I have an intelligent listener. Ah, that's even better. But let's refresh your memory and play a little bit of the piece I played last podcast. Well, our first winner is Amanda Harmon of Sykesville, Maryland. She currently is a student at the University of North Carolina in Greensboro. Congratulations, Amanda. she correctly identified that the piece was the Etler Sonata for bassoon and piano, and that was from the first movement. I'm so excited about Amanda's winning that I'm going to award her two unfabulous sonic prizes. First is my playing of a multiphonic labeled B-flat 1A, which can be found at the Bassoon Family Fingering Companion. Here it is. And second is Lisa Hoyt's performance of the very same multiphonic. Feel free to share this with friends. And if you want to find out that fingering yourself, Amanda and others, you can find that at idrs.org. Look at online publications. Go to bassoon fingering. And then look for fingerings for multiphonics. The direct link is idrs.colorado.edu/bsnfing/fingmult.htm. Well, our competition for the next podcast is going to be to correctly identify the composer, title, and movement of the music played at the beginning and the end of this podcast. Emails are due by October 21st. I hope to hear from you. Goodbye. Views expressed by the guest or host do not represent those of the International Double Reed Society. Be sure to listen each month to a new IDRS podcast. For further information, please visit the IDRS website at idrs.org. This is your host, Terry Ewell, thanking you for listening. Goodbye.